Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Wednesday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Sirius XM J83, all of our media platforms. It is great to have you in. We've made our show a little different over the last couple of weeks. Second hour, I bring on a guest, Mark Cuban, Bob Costas. Yesterday, Kevin Durant's business partner. An hour from now, Bill Simmons, Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K is coming on tomorrow. We're trying to bring on a 30-minute guest in our second hour and do these long-form sort of interviews that I used to do on radio, which I don't do now with a simulcast. I don't do 30-minute interviews. So this has been more of a radio feel than a TV feel. For the FS1 audience, but we're trying to make things unique. I hope you've had a good time. There's a lot of positive news out there today, which I'll get to in a bit. Joy Taylor's joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm doing great, Colin. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I want to start with, to me, I look for leadership in crisis, and it's not just leadership, but I look for strength and optimism. The NFL came out and said, yes, we're going to have a season. We're planning for it. Full steam ahead. And I like that over doomsday. They're not seeking perfection. We are out of the perfection business. There's a very interesting guy on the internet, probably the smartest person I've heard talk about this virus, Michael J. Ryan. He's a doctor, used to be the executive director of health emergencies for the World Health Organization. He dealt with Ebola, far more deadly than this virus. And he said the most important lesson he learned, don't let perfection get in the way of speed. Move, attack, be aggressive. You can't just run and hide from stuff. And you can't worry about perfection. The NFL's not worrying about perfection. They're not worried about optics. They don't care about Twitter. Twitter seeks perfection. Everybody's a genius on Twitter. If you misspell a word, you're a bum. That's not real life. Real life is we misspeak, we have opinions, sometimes we're wrong, sometimes we're offensive. That's real life. And with this virus, you can't seek perfection. The NFL's not. The free agency, people criticized it, the optics. NFL said, we can't worry about optics. We got to worry about business. They did it, and it was a huge hit. And they're also going to go on with the draft, which they should. Listen, part of this is the NFL got a big break. It falls out of season. I mean, if you can get a break with this, it's during the baseball and the NBA season. So they're going to get to watch people in other leagues and other smart leaders, Adam Silver, Rob Manfred, the MLS, NHL, kind of watch them navigate it. And they're probably going to find positions they like and some mistakes they'll avoid. But what they're doing with free agency is strength over doomsday. What they're doing with the draft is strength and optimism over doomsday. What they're going to do with the season right now, stop talking about canceling the season. It's absurd. The free agency period was a home run. It made people happy. The draft is the most optimistic 5, 6, 7 day stretch the NFL season has. If you don't understand the psychological ramifications of 15% unemployment, forget now. What about in 6 months? Unemployment, losing jobs, has a very impactful negative psychological ramification. You're seeing domestic violence cases spike during this. Kids getting in situations that are devastating physically because of frustrated parents. Optimism matters. The NFL draft is the only 5 to 6 days of the year on the NFL calendar that nobody loses. Everybody wins. Chicago wins. Tampa Bay wins. Philadelphia wins. Seattle wins. Green Bay wins. There's no whiffs for 5 days. Even though 30% of the players will whiff or underachieve, Bears fans really believe that fifth-round linebacker is going to win the division. It's optimistic. It's based on hope. It's incredibly impactful and incredibly powerful. And we need that right now. You can't just hide and run from stuff like this. You have to manage it. Now, I think social distancing is showing positive effects, and I am all for it. California was the first in on it, and we're seeing some real benefits from it. So I believe in social distancing. But I also believe the economy matters, and unemployment's scary, and the psychological effects on, children matter. So you have to just figure out how to manage it, not hide from it for the next 8 months. And the NFL is saying, listen, free agency is a phone business. We're going to do it. The draft is 95% of it's a phone business. We're going to do it. You can be socially isolated and do that stuff. It matters. It's amazing to me that people are offended. It's some sort of moral outrage to acknowledge we not only have a health crisis, A, but B, we have an economic crisis very, very soon, if not now. It's real. It's not immoral to acknowledge that. It's not immoral to acknowledge the psychological benefits of turning on a television for 5 days and feeling great about yourself and being distracted and getting off your phone. I mean, I'll give you a great example. Hollywood right now is mostly shut down. I don't think Hollywood's ever been more valuable to America. I mean, you can be an actor and sit on, social media all day and crap on our government. Go for it. But I am seeing the funniest comedians, the most brilliant singers. I'm watching Hollywood flourish. Hollywood is a huge benefit right now to America. I'm sitting home last night watching stand-up comedy routines, watching documentaries that make me feel good and distract me. If you don't see the benefit, I know you conservatives don't like all those liberals in Hollywood. I get it. They are helping me get through it. Singers, songwriters, artists, celebrities, they're funny. They're creative. That's why they're not accountants. They're getting us through this. If you don't think there's an advantage to what the singers out there and the songwriters and the artists and the comedians are doing, you're out of your mind. I can't help you. They have a huge impact right now. This is not just a physical dimension. There is a psychological ramification. There is an emotional ramification. And there's an economic ramification. I'm not going to put them in any order. Obviously, getting through this virus, which is really, really punitive on people 70 years or older with underlying medical conditions. But the draft is nothing but hope. People laugh at me all the time. I've known guys for years are like, you're so into the draft. You're such a draft dork. And I'm like, it makes me feel good. I'm a guy. I like architecture. I like building stuff. And I like recruiting. And part of it, recruiting makes me feel good. If my favorite teams get players. And the draft makes me feel good. You're telling me in 3 weeks we couldn't use 4 days of feeling good? Fantasy, hope. Not concrete evidence your team's going to be good, but a little positive influence on all of us. The USA needs it. We need it. We need Hollywood right now. I don't care what political party you're in. We need dancers and songwriters and comedians and actors and funny people. John Legend, get on Twitter and do something smart and funny. And David Spade and all the comedians that make me laugh. I mean, people can sit around crap on the government. But entertainers, just the word, entertainers, the entertainment industry, there's a responsibility to me at some level to do it, and you're great at it, and I am pro-draft, anti-doomsday, we'll get through it, and I think the psychology of the draft is clearly a benefit for people. I really, really do. I know as a fan, it's one of my favorite times of the year because nobody loses. The Bears win, the Packers win, the Vikings win, and the Lions win. All of them in the NFC North, they all win. The Browns win. The Bengals are rarely happy. They're going to be so happy in Cincinnati on draft weekend. The whole city's got, we got the next great player. We got the next Brady. Bad teams feel good about themselves. Lousy fan bases feel good about Jacksonville will feel great about itself.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So here's a story that's not going to happen, but it's being reported. And I'm not, the Miami Herald continues to report this. The Dolphins are trying to get the number one pick from Cincinnati for a bunch of draft picks. I'm very rarely shocked in sports. I've said this before. I read Andre Agassi's book. He did meth. Shocked me. That's one of those, O.J. Simpson's on the freeway running from police. Not going to lie, head spinner. Not shocked a lot in sports. I'd be shocked if Cincinnati moved off this. So let me just say that. I think aggressive wins. But Cincinnati is kind of trapped here. And so I think it's incredibly unfair for me to say Cincinnati have some guts and at least not provide some context. Beyond the fact that Joe Burrow is from Ohio, and that's a big part of this. Beyond the fact that he was the college football story of the year and can sell tickets, and that's a huge part of this. If you trade Joe Burrow to a better situation, he's going to win immediately because he's a very good B-plus prospect. I don't think he's an A-plus prospect like everybody else, but I think he's a very, very good B-plus prospect who, if given a very solid coach and a lot of good pieces in a reasonable division, can win now. Absolutely. We've seen that. I mean, Kyler Murray didn't win a lot last year. If you'd have put Kyler Murray on Baltimore and put Lamar Jackson on Arizona, Kyler Murray would be winning a lot of games right now. We know that where you land matters. I think Miami's a better situation than Cincinnati. First of all, they've got momentum. They won five of their last nine games. Secondly, they have a much easier division. Brady's gone. The Jets are still the Jets. Third, Miami's got a defensive head coach. I think they have a better head coach than Cincinnati. And I think he did a great job to shore up the weakness of the team corner and linebacker. He shored it up in free agency. Now they're going to go heavy to offense. And so there's a lot of things, and that division strength matters. So if you're the Cincinnati Bengals and you trade Joe Burrow for seven picks, which I've argued you should do, he's going to go to Miami with all those already good receivers. It's the one part of the team that's good, wide receivers. And you put Joe Burrow with an improved defense, those wide receivers, and they use all these picks to upgrade running backs and O-line, he's going to win 7, 8, 9, 10 games. He's a good prospect. Good prospects into good spots win games. Carson Wentz was a really good prospect. Philadelphia is a well-run organization. Didn't take long for him to win games. Okay, Russell Wilson went to Pete Carroll. Smart guy, John Schneider. What do you know? First year, won games. Deshaun Watson, surrounded by good offensive pieces. Don't always love the Texans, but won games. Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid. Sat 1 year. Next year, won games. So if you trade Joe Burrow and you're Cincinnati, you're almost guaranteed to be trading him to a better situation. I mean, outside of Jacksonville, what's not better than Cincinnati having to face the Ravens twice, the Steelers twice, and that Browns filthy roster twice? So, and the other thing is, it's different than moving off Peyton Manning knowing he's going to win somewhere else. Because the Colts had a Super Bowl and division title, so they had equity with their fans. When the Colts, which I argue needed to move off Peyton Manning, they already had equity built up. When the Packers moved off Brett Favre, they had equity in a Super Bowl and division titles built up. Take the New Orleans Saints. So Joe Burrow was a star at LSU. Down the street, hour drive from New Orleans, Baton Rouge. If the Saints had somehow been able to get the number one pick this year, let's say, you know, they worked a trade a year ago and they had the number one pick and they passed on Joe Burrow, they have equity. Fans in New Orleans would be like, oh, I love Joe Burrow, but, you know, our guys win Super Bowls and win division titles and they know what they're doing with quarterbacks and I'm okay with it. We got eight picks. We're going to dominate the division forever. But there's no equity in Cincinnati. They finish third and fourth every year. They don't have the great ownership. They don't have the great front office or scouting department. So they have no equity built in. So if you have no equity built in, and then you move off the local kid and he wins elsewhere, you're going to get crushed. It's just a PR tsunami you'll never overcome. The reason the NFL can have the draft in free agency is they have so much equity built in from fans that we like the NFL. They've made us happy. Sometimes we bet the games. They've made us money. They have equity built in. So if they do free agency and get some blowback, they've got a lot of equity in it. The Colts with Peyton had equity. The Saints with Drew Brees have equity. By the way, you know, if New England this year decides to get really young and experiment and loses 10 games, they've got equity. Bengals have none. Zero. So the idea of letting somebody like Burrow go where he'll flourish initially, It's just a PR mess that I can understand Cincinnati doesn't want to get into. I get it. I would, eight picks, I'd move him. But it's unfair for me to criticize Cincinnati and not at least add, you know, some context to it. Local kid, had the great year, will sell tickets, and everywhere we move him, would probably be a better situation than us, and he'll win immediately, and we don't want the blowback.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Bill Simmons, we used to work at the same company, then we changed places, blah, blah, blah. He works at The Ringer, recently sold to Spotify. Who could figure that deal out? He made a bunch of money, but he was already doing well, so I'm not worried about that. He still wears hoodies. I mean, it's not like Bill's going to wear tuxedos. He wears hoodies. Joy Taylor's also joining me. So let me guess. You're not wearing a tux yet. You're still, despite selling to Spotify, you still wore a hoodie right now as we speak.
I haven't changed, Colin, but you have changed.
Yeah.
You finally are allowing people to call into your show. I just did a tweet about your egomaniacal policy of people have to come into the studio
yeah.
so you can stare down at them from your desk. You lord over them in their opinions
yeah.
from a higher plane.
Yeah.
So now the coronavirus has reduced you to phone calls, and I couldn't be happier, at least about that.
I had Costas on for 30 minutes yesterday, and we'll keep you on as long as you want. So I don't believe it's immoral. I think all crises have to be managed. You can run, you can hide, but you have to manage stuff. It's like being a dad, it's like being a parent, it's like being like you, a big boss with a lot of employees. You got to manage stuff. I don't think it's immoral to consider NBA games with no fans, to talk about NBA games, coaches wear masks. I think this stuff's all on the table. How does it land for you? I mean, Twitter's seeking perfection. That doesn't exist in real life. In real life, you and I have discussions about businesses, and some ideas of ours are probably crazy and some are good. What do you make of the idea of, listen, let's get this NBA season in some way, somehow. It's just going to be a new normal.
You know, I've been pretty early. Like I did a podcast with Gladwell basically right after the Gobert thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like we were just being too optimistic about how all this is going to play out. And I think we're even feeling it now as people are trying to get excited about sports coming back. And, you know, when we can get through this and these next 2 months are going to be horrendous, obviously. And once we can get to the other side, when can life start to feel normal again? I just am really skeptical it's going to feel normal for a while. And, you know, you look at, like, the basketball playoffs, I think there's a drop-dead date for that. For, like, if it doesn't be able to wrap up by Labor Day, at that point, like, what are we doing?
Right.
Like, you might as well just cancel the season and move on. And so we really have to start by July 1st. So, you know, optimistically, you're going, all right, everything will be normal by July 1st, hopefully, or better, or relatively normal. I still think it's going to take a long time for people to want to be in crowds.
Yeah.
Even if people are telling us it's cool, it's okay. Like, just imagine being at the Staples Center or, you know, whatever NBA arena you want to talk about, just sitting in a section with 100 people. I think that's going to take a lot longer to come back than we realized.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about empty arenas for playoff games. And it's like, to what end? If the players aren't totally comfortable with it, if we haven't figured out a 100% way for everybody to be safe, are we really going to do that? I think, you know, now it's April. It's April 1st today. You know, this stuff moves fast. All of a sudden, it's going to be May. Are we really going to be at a place where these guys are going to be in empty arenas? I don't see it. I think it's going to be more likely it gets canceled.
You know, the NFL has said, listen, and the NFL is not as tied to social media as the NBA, which has a younger demo. The NFL has said, listen, we're going to do free agency. It's a telephone business. We're going to release the schedule. It's a telephone business. We're going to do the draft. 95% of it's a telephone business. I argue this. We're not only in a medical crisis. We are soon going to be in a economic crisis. And I also think we're going to have a psychological crisis as unemployment soars. Goldman Sachs predicts 15%. That I do think the draft is a uniquely positive and hopeful sports event where there are no losers. Even the Buccaneers and the Jags feel great after the weekend. And if you can I think the stuff matters. I said this to start my show today. Hollywood, people think Hollywood right now is not working. Oh, yes, they are. It is getting us through. The talented people, the comedians who are funny on Twitter every day. I'm watching shows and documentaries. I've never felt Hollywood is more vital to my psychological, you know, sense of well-being. So I'm for the NFL saying, listen, the draft is optimistic. Nobody loses. It's 5 days of fun and hope. We're going to go for it. What say you?
I heard the beginning of your show. I thought you did a good job with that. You know, I know on the face of it, it looks a little dicey, especially like it really does seem like so many things are going to get worse here over the next couple of weeks, and whether people are going to be in the mood to watch college kids get drafted. I don't know. I don't know where we're going to be at the end of April, but I'm with you. I feel like if we can do even something as simple as the NFL draft, where it takes people's minds off stuff for the next four to five days at the end of the month, I don't know why that's a bad thing. And I know the teams are against it, but look, like, you know, I think we've all seen all these things that we thought we were doing a certain way. We've been able to adapt. Like, we're doing it with our business at The Ringer. Like, we figured out how to do probably 70 to 80% of our podcasts remotely with people in different places. Like, you just kind of, we didn't have a choice, but we figured it out. And now we have a model that's been working pretty well. You figured out how to do your show. I think it's okay if they figure out how to do the NFL draft and it's a little different. And these guys don't get, these teams don't get interviews with quarterbacks. Maybe they do it on Zoom. Maybe they do it on FaceTime, whatever. I would really rather see them keep that going, because you even look at this week, they announced that, NBA 2K tournament with the NBA players. People were excited about it.
Of course.
Like, oh, cool. Kevin Durant's going to play a video game against somebody. What time? I'm there. Like, nobody has anything to do.
Right.
So I think the draft will really help in that respect. I hope they keep it.
Now, I don't know if you heard. You probably did. I broke the Brady story to Tampa Bay. It was, you know, again, when the big stuff happens, the Herd, this is Big J journalism. So, anywho,
You don't get credit when you break stuff. Russillo and I talk about stuff on our Sunday pod all the time. We never get credit. I told people a week and a half ago they were releasing that Jordan documentary early. Nobody listened to me. I know you were on the Brady thing. You were on it. You had it. And it was 60 to 1 like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
The odds were 60 to 1 he was going to go to the Bucks. So somebody actually probably made some money from it.
But I would say this. I look at it, and I'm not into that who matters more, Brady or Belichick. I tend to think you got to – this stuff works because both get along. But I will say this, and I've thrown this theory out. New England has so much equity. They didn't re-sign their kicker. They didn't re-sign their two playmaking linebackers. They're going to go with Jared Stidham. They would have won more games potentially with Teddy Bridgewater. Is that they got 12 picks. I'm going to throw it at you, Bill. They're going to get three compensatory picks next year because of Brady, Van Noy, and Jamie Collins. They're going to move, in my belief, 4-5 picks this year to next year. They're going to have 14 picks. They're going to be a 7-9 team, 8th in the league draft, 9th. They're going to go to somebody and say, we're going to give you 9 picks to get the top pick, because there's a high probability the worst team in the league next year is not going to need a quarterback. It's not tanking. They can still maintain their integrity. Miami this year built a culture losing games. You don't have to win the Super Bowl and win your division to build a culture. I think New England is going to stockpile picks and throw 10 at somebody to get Lawrence or Justin Fields. Rip my theory apart.
Yeah, I'm not against it. Even Edelman, it seems like he might be heading to Detroit.
Yes.
Is that official? So two things have happened here. They've had a couple bad drafts, dating back to the Deflategate losing that first round pick that year. But if you just look at the totality of the drafts from like 15 through last year, not the same. And you know, they kind of ebb and flow with these little runs that the Pats have, depending on how the drafts were. The second run that they had, where they won the 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, it was. A lot of that had to do with the drafts that they had, the moves they made the years before. Same thing with the first three, 01 and 03 and 04. So I think there's been some roster atrophy that you could really feel last year. The team was just not that talented last
year. They were slow. They were very slow offensively.
It just wasn't great. The second half of the season was not good. And, you know, the Pats have such – equity with people, because over and over again, when we think it's over for them, they were able to pull it out. And last year, everybody's waiting, but you know, the people that were actually watching the team week in and week out were like, wow, this is just not a very good team. I think Belichick knows that. I agree with you. I don't think he would ever tank, but if you look at the moves they made this year,
yep.
They have a huge cap hit, like $26 million. They let go a lot of culture people,
yep,
like Van Noy, Edelman, Brady, huge culture guy. Everybody loved him, awesome teammate. And it does seem like they're going to take their lumps this year. Here's the thing, though, Colin. Belichick is so much smarter than everybody else.
Yes.
All the advantages they have week to week just from intelligence and IQ and the players they pick, I think it would be impossible for them to go like 2-14.
Oh, yeah, totally. No. They'll win six games because they're smarter, but it is becoming.
But could they win 10, though?
Bill.
10-6.
Listen, if C.J. Mosley is healthy for the Jets and they patch the old line and they're on their way, their Bills are going to be good. I think Miami's close, or I think the Jets, again, if Mosley's healthy and the O-line is better, they're a 9-win team. They won 7 last year. The quarterback had mono with the worst offensive.
Did they change their coach?
Listen, he's not my cup of tea. But I'll say this. 7-9, last year the Patriots and Buffalo was good. 7-9, quarterback had mono for a month. It's not a shipwreck there.
No, I like Miami's situation more, though, with all their picks.
Yeah.
I think they have a great coach.
So do I.
I was so impressed with him last year.
Yes. Hey,
really, like he's top 6 or top 7 and put a culture in the media. It was basically the opposite of what everyone thought Matt Patricia was going to do. He was a bozo and is a bozo and continues to be a bozo. Brian Flores actually knows what he's doing.
Yep.
And that Week 17 win that they had when they upset the Patriots completely toppled the playoff picture and was the reason the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. It really was. The Pats would have had a bye in round one, and they just would have pulled it out the way they always do, and everything flipped when they won that game,
yep,
and that was just because of Flores.
Yeah, no, we've said this. We think he's the one guy that works. And by the way, what's the first thing he does second year? He spends money like Belichick does. He goes and gets corners. That's the one position Bill's always spent money on is corner,
yep,
and Flores is like, yeah, we're going to have a great secondary. So I'm with you. All right, let's move to something we both have fondness for. Our former employer is coming out with this Bulls documentary, which you broke the story, didn't get credit, but you will here because I believe
yeah,
in journalism. Okay, so I said yesterday, and I'm not going to get into my brilliant rant, but I said it's the most beloved team in America, the Bulls, period, end of story, and here's why. They were in the Eastern Conference, but they had a Western Conference glamour. So they had the lunch pail Midwest sensibility. Everybody loved them. They were tough, like Big East basketball and the kind of stuff that New Yorkers are tough. Philadelphia guys tough. They were tough. They were lunch pail. But guys out west, you and I know this. The Pacific Ocean has this ability. It's easier out here. We like finesse. We like glamour. And it matters. Kardashians are celebrities out here. They wouldn't work like that in New York. So he was able to lunch pail it, tough it, and glamorize it. We loved him. Jordan was – LeBron's still 50-50. I contend outside of Detroit and Boston, and even there you respected him. I think it's the most popular team in my life. I don't think you could do a 10-part 30-for-30, which you invented, with any other team. So let's start with the premise. I think they're the most popular American sports team, and you can't count Olympic teams. Let's get out of that. In my life,
yeah.
Do you agree with that?
100%. I think there was no experience like that specific Bulls team after Jordan came back for those 3 years when they came into a city. I've never seen anything like it before since. I wrote about it. Jordan, I get it with the under 30 people. LeBron's their guy.
Yeah.
They were there for LeBron. They don't understand why he's not the best. Jordan was just more popular or more famous than LeBron.
Yes.
Or Kobe or anyone else you want to name. In every conceivable way, he transcended celebrity. I went to games. I remember going to a couple Boston games near his last couple Bulls years here. When he would come in for the pregame warmups, and the whole place would stop, and it was just like 18,000 people just staring at one person. There's never been another athlete like that. He was so insanely famous and beloved that I'm really glad they're doing this. We tried to do it. After we finished the first 30 for 30 series where we had everything going in 2009, we knew about this documentary that NBA Entertainment had, you know, they had filmed his whole season. They had all this behind the scenes stuff. So we got a copy of it and we watched it. and the behind the scenes stuff, it was the real Jordan. It was like the homicidally competitive Jordan, the guy yelling at his teammates. It was all the stuff that we'd always heard about, but I'd never seen. And we were just like, how do we get this made? Jordan never wanted it. And I think, you know, what happened middle of the decade, especially after LeBron won that Cavs title, when things really started to shift and all of a sudden there was an MJ versus LeBron argument, I think for the first time, Jordan and his camp realized, oh, we got to protect our legacy here.
Yeah.
I think people are starting to forget like how great and famous and how universally everyone thought who was there, this is the best basketball player I'm ever going to see. And I still feel that way. I know you do too.
Yeah. No. Michael's the best player I've ever seen. LeBron second, Magic's third. I do think Magic was closer to Michael because he elevated teammates, but he wasn't the athlete. He didn't play that. Magic was never a good defender. So those are the three best basketball players I've ever seen. And I would say this, Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan are the two most important athletes of my life. Tiger Woods probably has an argument, but it's golf. It's not as personality driven. Muhammad Ali today, Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan were not only great, but they were fashionable. They were good looking. They were the most glamorous. They were
cool.
And they were cool. Nothing against LeBron. I've never thought LeBron's cool. Michael was cool, right?
Well, and this was the thing Tiger never had, because I think Tiger would have been the third piece of that.
Yeah.
Tiger just wasn't cool like those guys. Jordan was the coolest guy in every room he was in, and that room could have 20 people, 100, or 20,000. And I think one of the reasons I'm so excited, and by the way, my friend is doing it, who I did Andre the Giant with, Jason Hare, and he's fantastic. And I'm just really excited for him because I think this doc would have been a big deal anyway. But just the way it's all played out, where people actually need entertainment, they're moving it up. I think this is going to be one of the biggest docs ever.
Oh, I think it's going to be the biggest sports doc.
Massive. And it's going to remind people, oh, my God, what were we doing? Jordan was the best basketball player ever. Why were we arguing about this? This guy, he averaged 41 in the 1993 finals. And it was just like an easy 41. It wasn't like he got hot. This was just, there were more possessions back then. And he was just, I'm getting my 41. I think the game six of the 98 finals, which you could pick apart pretty easily from an advanced metric standpoint, he's like 17 for 41 in that game, is the greatest game I've ever seen anyone play. And my number two would be game one of LeBron 2018 finals in Golden State.
Oh, God, that was incredible.
That was the second greatest game I've ever seen anybody play. But when you watch what Jordan did in that, in that last game, which ended with the famous shot, Rodman is basically done. He's like luggage at that point. Pippen's got a bad back. He can't move. He's got a bunch of ninth and tenth men around him. And he knows he has to win that game. Can't let it get to a game seven. And he knows, I have to control every minute of this game. I have to control every piece of energy I have in my body. It has to play out a certain way. The pace has to be this. And I have to pick my spots. And it's honestly like watching Ali beat Foreman, where Ali's like, okay, this is the only way I can win. I have to do these 19 things and get it to this point. And then I can, in the 10th round, I can get them. And that's how Jordan handles that game. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life for basketball. It really is.
Bill Simmons recently sold his project to Spotify. And by the way, I want to get into your personal life much, but I always said if I, hit it, big, I would buy a lifetime supply of peanut brittle, and I'd buy a lady in the house that just made all my meals. So I know you're not just didn't have to be a lady, by the way, it could be anybody. Just I want somebody making me smoothies for breakfast and salmon salad for lunch. So what is the one thing? You're not a showy guy at all. I don't know you that well, but I know you well enough. You're not showy at all. But is there one thing that you thought about buying?
No. I'm just moving forward. I think the exciting thing for us is, we put a lot of time and effort into the little company we were building.
Yeah.
And then we were able to hook up with this bigger company that I've been in that situation before at ESPN, as have you. When you have a huge company that has a big platform and reach and smarts and money, that's honestly the best place to be. The happiest I've ever been professionally my whole life was you know, the heyday of ESPN when we were doing 30 for 30 in Grantland you know, ESPN was really spending money on the right things. There wasn't a lot of corporate interference, good people in charge. I loved it. I really had, I look back at that. I'm like, that was amazing. I was basically on the 27 Yankees for sports media there for 4 years.
So now you're back. So now you're back
Spotify
and happy.
Thing, yeah. I think Spotify has a chance to be that for audio. So that was the biggest reason for me.
Hey, thanks for thanks for coming on the show. You're very, very in demand. It was very kind of you to give.
Wait, you didn't ask me about Brady. I don't understand.
Oh, okay. I'll give you one. Okay, yeah, I have.
Give me 1 minute on Brady.
Okay, so, well, I ask you about that. So, what do you specifically do you want? Okay, how is he going to do in Tampa? He's going to be a wild card guy. He's going to be productive, right?
Here's my thing. And I can't remember which comedian had this bit, so I apologize. But this is going to be in your wheelhouse, Colin. If, you know, you, like, I don't know if your parents are still alive, but if you have, like, 75-year-old parents and they've been married for 60 years, 50 years, whatever. Yeah. Let's say your parents are 78. They've been married for 55 years. And they call you one day and they say, we're getting a divorce. We've just kind of had it with each other. That's it. And your reaction would be like, why now? You guys are in your late 70s. What are you, like, what are you going to date? You're going to go on Tinder? Like, you've come this far. Why not just hit the finish line together? And that's how I feel that way about Brady. I'm like, why now? It's been 20 years. You have a chance to have one of the all-time iconic drafted by a team, finish your career with a team thing. Didn't you watch the reaction with Kobe in Los Angeles, how much he meant to people here because he stayed here the whole time and he settled here and all the connections he had. Like, what is better than that for a legacy?
No,
you're going to go to Tampa. You're going to play for Bruce Arians. You're going to have a bunch of 75-year-olds in the stands and a team with no history. Like, how do you do this? How is this how your career ends? I just don't get it.
No,
I'm confused.
Yeah, no, the parent thing is right. Like, if you get through 50 years – living together in Brooklyn, and you're annoying each other, just tough it out. I mean, just deal with it, right?
Just name me one great athlete who really looks back like, oh, man, like MJ, like, oh, man, those last 2 years on the Wizards. Thank God I did that. You know, it's like Favre, like, oh, man, that last Vikings year after we almost made the NFC title game when I got the crap kicked out of me and we went like 5-11. That was awesome. I'm so glad that happened. Like, this always ends badly, and I think he's just going to keep going until this ends badly, until he has the same season that Peyton Manning had, when Peyton Manning had 9 TDs and 17 interceptions, and people were wondering if Brock Osweiler should take his job. Like, is that how Brady wants this to end? I guess it is.
That's a great perspective. You stole it from some comedian you forgot, but nonetheless, it was a hell of a perspective.
I know. I'm sorry. I apologize to random comedian. I know I heard that bit before, and it was a great bit, and that's how I feel about Brady. It's like, you guys are 78. Why are you getting divorced?
That's great. Bill, I love you.
Great. I'm ready anytime now that you accept phone calls. Just tell me when you want me on. I'm on.
All right, buddy. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I see this ex-Ravens scout, my buddy Daniel Jeremiah, used to be a scout for the Ravens. And he was looking through some old stuff the other day, and he found a document he received in his time with the Ravens, who descended from the Cleveland Browns after they moved from Baltimore. And it was what Belichick's ideal offense looks like. And it's really fascinating. Every single position. I mean, this looks like, you know, it's 1991, so it's like 35 years ago. How many years that is? But the quarterback situation, the quarterback script is very interesting. So this is Belichick in 1991 when he was in Cleveland. Number one for a quarterback is to make good decisions. Then arm and size and toughness, leadership. Okay, accurate rather than a guy with a cannon. Emphasis on our game will be on decisions and accuracy. He needs to be intelligent, confident, but not as much as field awareness. Judgment can't be sloppy fundamentally. The quarterback has to be able to throw the ball with accuracy. Now you see why they don't want Cam? He mentioned judgment twice, accuracy 3 times. Cam's not his guy. So when all these things come out, Bill Belichick has not changed. You can say what you want about Cam. Accuracy is his weakness. Bill mentions it three times in 1991. Judgment, not great. He also mentions twice mechanics. Footwork, drops, release, can't be sloppy fundamentally. Cam is talented, but his mechanics, to me, are way below average. So accuracy and mechanics, way below league average. Well, that's what matters to him. The third thing is judgment, and sometimes Cam has good judgment, sometimes he doesn't. I mean, that one's hit or miss. I think it's average to slightly below league average, what you'd want for an ideal quarterback. It's certainly not in the Russell Wilson, Drew Brees category of judgment. But when people say, oh, why wouldn't New England go? There's nothing about Cam that interests him. And so what did he say over and over that matters? You know, I'll give you an example of this. When Tim Tebow came out, I was never a Tebow fan. And I love watching SEC football. But there was a time, I thought it was just unbelievable. This was one of the things that was unbelievable. I was called contrarian. I worked at ESPN, and like legitimate ESPN NFL people were like, he's won seven straight. This guy, and I'm like, stop it. He completes 47% of his throws. You can't win in this league long term. You can win games. Nobody's going to build around a guy that completes 47% of his throws. That's always been my knock on Cam. Well, his receivers, his back, he completes 59% of his throws. That's his career average. That's not good enough. And he's had multiple coordinators. He's had multiple people to throw to. He's had multiple offensive line, but he's like a 59% guy. So in this day and age, if you're not 63, 64, 65, generally, you better be able to run around a little because that's like the baseline. So I never, ever bought into Tebow. It didn't matter that he won seven straight games. It didn't matter that he could run around. It didn't matter that he was profoundly popular. It didn't matter. He's not accurate enough. And his mechanics, as much as Tim worked on him, he had a goofy, wacky, slow windup. So there you go. That's why a lot of people are like Belichick. You know, that's what matters to them. What matters is accuracy, judgment, and mechanics. And by the way, not everybody has great mechanics. Like Lamar Jackson's throws a little quirky. But I'll tell you, from rookie year to year two, got better. Lamar's mechanics got better. And now, Phillip Rivers, never good ever. He's been throwing that way since he was eight. I saw him in college. That's the way he throws. But Lamar's were a little quirky. 1 year, rookie year to second year, I'm like, oh, Lamar's are better. With Cam, his mechanics, his footwork has always been below average. So there you go. That explains a lot.